All right, thank you very much for sticking around for a 4:30 session. Today I'm going to be presenting some work titled Resources and Risks in Two Latino Neighborhoods in New York City. This is work that I've completed with two other doctoral student colleagues and my doctoral advisor at Columbia University. So as many of you know, the Latino population in the U.S. has been steadily growing, and Latinos now make up about 16% of the total U.S. population, and there are over 50 million Latinos in the 2010 census, and the growth is projected to continue. And research has found that most Latinos live within majority Latino census tracts. So what does this mean? That most Latinos living in the United States live within census tracts, which are geographic designations created by the census, with many other Latinos. So we were interested in these majority Latino communities and neighborhoods in our research. So for our research, we're drawing from two different literatures. The first literature is what I'm calling this risk-focused literature that comes primarily from social epidemiology. This is a literature that tends to characterize neighborhoods by a percentage of minority residents when compared to white residents in the neighborhood. And studies have found that higher numbers of health-averse establishments, such as liquor stores, are present in neighborhoods that have greater numbers of minority residents. That's Black and Latino residents. Additionally, research has shown that residents of these majority Black and Latino neighborhoods have perceived that there's lower social cohesion, reduced walkability, and worse safety in these neighborhoods. On the other hand, there's another literature that's also informing our research, which is the ethnic enclave literature that comes from the social sciences primarily, from sociology and political science. So the simplest designation of an ethnic enclave are many people of the same ethnicity living in the same geographical space. But researchers in this literature have posited that many other factors are also important in characterizing ethnic enclaves. The first are these shared linguistic and cultural bonds that residents of ethnic enclaves have. So basically, they speak the same languages, they have the same culture, and can draw upon that. Additionally, there's a greater availability of culturally appropriate goods and services. And one sociologist, Small, came up with the idea of resource brokers, which are establishments or people that are able to bring others together to be able to share information, useful information, about things like job opportunities and small business opportunities. There's also a growing literature that shows that living in an ethnic enclave may confer some health benefits to Latinos. So coming from these two literatures, we sought to assess the different number of risks and resources within a Dominican ethnic enclave in New York City compared to a non-enclave neighborhood also in New York. So the first question you might be asking is why Dominicans, though maybe not after the wonderful presentation that we just had. Latinos are often treated as a monolithic group in research, though many studies have found that there are huge differences in health behaviors and health outcomes depending on nativity status, country of origin, level of acculturation, etc. So in our work, we chose to focus on one Latino group, which is the fifth largest Latino group in the United States, people coming from the Dominican Republic. 48% of all Dominicans that live in the United States live in New York City. And they're an understudied population in the sense that much research just lumps all Latinos together, and so we don't have that much information specifically on Latinos. On Dominicans, sorry. The two neighborhoods that we assessed were Washington Heights and Inwood, which is in the northern area of Manhattan, and the Western Bronx in the Tremont neighborhood area. So both of these neighborhoods, as you can see here, we have the percent Latino and the percent non-Latino. This is the simplest designation, again, of the neighborhood characteristics. And both neighborhoods meet the criterion of being majority Latino neighborhoods. So both have 50% or higher population of Latinos. However, when you actually break out what the Latino groups are, you'll see that they are quite different from each other in that Washington Heights has a very large and homogeneous Dominican population with a smaller, much smaller percentage of non-Latino and also of other Latino. Whereas in the Bronx, we see more of a mixture of Dominicans in the blue, and then in the other Latino, it's mostly Puerto Ricans, but also a significant amount of other of people from South America as well. So to break down some of the similarities and differences between these two neighborhoods, as I just showed you, Washington Heights and the Western Bronx both have are both majority Latino neighborhoods. They have very similar median household incomes, so in the low to mid 20s per year, and have very similar levels of low-income people. So low-income people in this are families of four making less than $41,000 a year. However, Washington Heights has a homogenous Latino population, or a more homogenous Latino population, and the Western Bronx is not so homogenous. So based on this last part, we're considering Washington Heights to be an ethnic enclave neighborhood, whereas the Western Bronx is a similarly low SES, majority Latino, non-enclave neighborhood. So now I'm going to walk you through a little bit of our methodology and how we actually collected the data to assess these two neighborhoods. The first step was to select 10 census tracts in each neighborhood, and we selected these based on the number of Dominican residents in each census tract. So we selected the 10 most Dominican census tracts in both neighborhoods. As you can see here, we have the each census tract is circled that we actually coded. This is in Washington Heights and Inwood, and we followed a similar procedure in the Bronx. So just to give you an example here, this is one tract, census tract 261. And for each census tract, we created a comprehensive list of all of the street sides within that tract. So a street side is basically a New York City block, one side of the New York City block. So these were all of the streets that we could possibly code. And then from there, we randomly selected 25% of the streets for coding. So as you can see here in the red, you can see the streets that we actually coded in census tract 261. So across both neighborhoods, we had 202 streets coded. So the coding actually occurred at the street level by trained and reliable coders who were tallying specific elements basically on a piece of paper, counting up what was available or present in the neighborhood. So true to our idea about both risks and resources, one of the overarching theoretical categories that we coded for was risks. So these include things like bars, abandoned buildings, fast food restaurants, liquor stores, open garbage areas, etc. And then within the category of resources, we actually thought about two different theoretical areas. The first one being structural resources, which are resources that are useful to any resident, including Dominicans, but to any resident. Things such as banks, doctor's offices, grocery stores, parks, etc. And cultural resources, which were more related to Dominican culture and establishments that would primarily be used by the Dominican population in the neighborhood. So these are things like botanicas and Dominican hair salons. So as I stated before, the data that we collected were count data. So each reliable coder just tallied each time they saw something on our coding scheme. So for the statistical analyses, we demi-coded the predictor variable. So enclave status was the predictor, with the comparison neighborhood being 0 and ethnic enclave being 1. And examined risk, structural resources, and cultural resources in three different models. That is to say that the first model was, does enclave status predict risk? The second model, does enclave status predict structural resources, et cetera? And we used a Poisson GLM to account for the non-normal distribution of count data. Initially, we considered two covariates. The first covariate that we considered was median household income at the tract level. This is the data that we obtained from the census because we were worried that perhaps the neighborhoods were not well matched enough in this category and that it could be driving some of the effects that we saw. Additionally, we also considered street length because there was some question about whether one of the neighborhoods was just denser than the other neighborhood and how if this could be driving some of the effects. But in fact, when we included these covariates, they did not significantly change the model fit. So I am reporting the simpler bivariate models. So first I'd like to walk you through some descriptive statistics of what we saw. To orient you to the y-axis, the average number per street side, this just means on any given street side, the average number of something that we saw. So for example, with risks in the ethnic enclave neighborhood, on average we saw 1.3 risks per street. And in the comparison neighborhood, we saw 1.1 roughly per street. With cultural resources, we saw about 0.3 per street for ethnic enclave and 0.4 per street for comparison neighborhood. And the way to interpret these values that are less than 1 is basically like 0.3 means that we saw 1 every 3 streets. And then with the structural resources is where we saw the larger difference between the two neighborhoods, with the ethnic enclave neighborhood having more than 2 structural resources per street compared to the comparison neighborhood, which had 1.1. So using our statistical analyses, we found that in fact there was that enclave status was a significant predictor of structural resources at the street level, while risks and cultural resources were not significantly predicted by enclave status. Here you can see the actual raw data for structural resources. Each little dot is one street that was coded. So as you can see in the ethnic enclave neighborhood, we have a greater number of streets that have a greater number of structural resources on them. And don't be alarmed by this distribution. It's how the distribution for count data should look. So based on our work, we did not find evidence for considering ethnic enclaves to be risky spaces. Of course, I'm going to have to say that really risk depends on what the comparison that you're using is. So I'm not saying that this neighborhood would not be considered like more risky when compared to a more affluent neighborhood or a white neighborhood or a different neighborhood. But in our work, where we tried to match the two neighborhoods as well as possible, and they were both similarly low SES, majority Latino neighborhoods, we did not find any evidence that the ethnic enclave neighborhood was more risky than the non-enclave neighborhood. What we did find was support for this idea of resource brokers and greater number of structural resources. Additionally, we also didn't find any effect of enclave on cultural resources, which is a little bit puzzling. Some limitations of the work, of course, this is work on two neighborhoods in one city, which means that it might not be applicable to other cities or even other neighborhoods within the same city. Additionally, we had just a low number of cultural resources. So if we're going to work on this further, we probably want to reassess that category and try to think about maybe more types of establishments that are culturally relevant to Dominican people. Additionally, we can't really say anything about non-Latino enclaves based on this research. But many strengths do merit mention. So the first one is that we actually did street-level observation within a short time period. And this allowed us to look at specific variables that we were interested in that might not have been available, you know, through GIS or census level analyses. And also, of course, the consideration of risks and resources was instrumental, because if we had only considered risks, we would not have characterized these neighborhoods in the most accurate way. So considering both risks and resources allowed us to paint a fuller picture and really show that these neighborhoods are different from each other. And additionally, as I mentioned before, we're adding to the research on an understudied population. So there are several future directions with this work. So the first one would be analyses of specific neighborhood elements. In this work, we really did the statistical analyses at the aggregate level. So we considered, you know, risk, structural resources, and cultural resources. However, it would be interesting to look at what the specific risks and structural resources are that may be driving the effects. So for example, you know, is it just that the enclaves have like more green space? Is it that they have more grocers? Those types of analyses. Additionally, coding beyond the street level would be very interesting to see what the what's going on, like what kind of goods are available within establishments, and also just what's going on within in housing conditions and other things like that. Of course, this work needs to be replicated in other enclave neighborhoods, and really I consider it to be a first step in characterizing these neighborhoods. And this is work that I'm actually excited to say that we are working on, which is linking to individual level data and specific health outcomes. So we have survey data from people that live in these neighborhoods, and then we can see if this increase in structural resources actually results in different health outcomes. I'd like to thank Drs. Niall Bulger and Naoya Okwate, who were instrumental in the completion of this work, and of course my co-authors and my advisor, and also NCI for supporting this work through a grant. Thanks.